I'm afraid to fly. I love when you get on planes, you're like, in the event of a crash landing, your seat cushion doubles as a flotation device. If we're crashing, my seat cushion's gonna double as a toilet.
Yeah. No flotation going on down there.
Some of my friends fly those Priceline flights. Ugh, I don't get on those. It's like chickens on board. Priceline, if you don't know, it's this website you go on, you name the price you want to pay, then you just don't get a ticket. It's great. None of the hassles of flying, you know. You're just at home with your bags like, what? What?
Fresta Civic Media Station. I'm Don Rose, and Tom Carco joining me here in studio today because today is WRJN historical marker number 7, lucky 7. Jim Sorensen, former morning air personality here at WRJN Radio before I got here. And I think he came with the bricks in the building. Jim Sorensen is here. Hey, Jim, thanks for joining us this morning. I do appreciate it.
Pleasure being here. I had to get up anyway. I got a colonoscopy scheduled for later.
You don't really.
Figures.
You don't really. Okay,
no,
good.
No.
I just. Yeah, that last night would have been the worst night of your life. It's not the colonoscopy. It's the night before the colonoscopy. I know. I've had a couple of them. By the way, I did read something the other day. They said they have done colonoscopies where they found living organisms like insects and everything inside during a colonoscopy. And I want my doctor to know if he finds anything in there, I don't want to know about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't need to know that.
Yeah, I don't need that either. So, Jim, before we begin with your WRJN career, where am I calling now? Where do you live now?
South Florida, Southeast Florida. I live in Boca Raton.
Okay. When did you start in radio? What year are we talking? Not here, but in radio.
1965, maybe. Late 4, early 5.
See, I remember the exact date I started in radio because it's one of those things like when they ask you your birthday, it just shoots right out of your mouth. With me, I remember the exact date. Okay, so where did you work before?
They say the guys who are being hanged remember the exact moment when that happened, too.
I'm sure they do.
Same old Jim.
So, where was the first station you worked at?
It was in Zion, Illinois. But no, I take it back. I'm a liar. It was WFNY in Racine.
That was really your first station?
Yep. I worked for Jerry Feeney.
92.1 FM, which was co-owned with the station for years.
Jerry Feeney used to be a salesman here.
Yeah.
That's right. He also owned that station.
Yes, he did. I worked for him, too.
Hence the call letters FNY.
We played records. We did not talk. We played records.
I got there. It was tapes.
Being a board op, basically. And he had taken little pieces of masking tape and taped out certain tracks on the record, so you didn't play those tracks.
Yes.
You only played the tracks that were.
Yep.
You know? And it was, and that was kind of a fun station. I don't know if you know the history of it or not. I have no idea what's happened to it, you know, since then, of course. But in those days, its tower was right outside the studio building. And it was at the land end of the pier down on the lake. And that tower and its light on top served as an aiming point for people who were trying to bring boats into the harbor. That and the lighthouse, of course.
I got to go down and look for that, if it's still possible.
I don't know.
So anyway, WFNY, just so you know, a little update here, became WHKQ, part of WRJN. It was WRJN's FM station. WHKQ became WEZY, and then it was purchased by Dave Magnum and changed call letters and formats like you change flavors of ice cream. It kept changing call letters over and over, different formats, and it wound up as WVTY. It's a country station, and although it's licensed to Racine, it's up in middle Wisconsin somewhere in, not Plattsville, I'm trying to think of where it was. It's somewhere in the middle of Wisconsin. It's not even in Racine anymore, although it's licensed to Racine. The station itself is nowhere near. It's hundreds of miles away now.
All that stuff disappeared.
Yeah, it's all gone. So anyway, so when did you come to WRJN?
1971, late in 1971. I'd gotten married earlier in that year, several months earlier, and my wife decided that it would be a good idea if I actually had a job and that paid something. And WRJN in those days was a union radio station, so we all belonged to AFTRA-SAG, and the engineers were IBEW, and I don't think there was another one but the two. But it was run like people at the time would have looked at the movies and said, oh, that's a radio station. They got a guy who runs the console, and they've got a guy who talks on a big-ass microphone and things like that.
Yeah. You did. Now, did you have your engineering? Were you technically an engineer or capable engineer at that point?
I studied physics in college.
Did you?
And one of the things that you learn quickly when you are a physics student is that if you're not really, 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 really good at it, you're going to starve to death. So you go out and you set the exam for a couple of state licenses so you can at least have a job of some sort. I did that. I had state licenses, and then I wrote the exam for the federal license, which was more complicated in those days than it is now. I don't think it even exists anymore.
Okay. Because I remember when I came here in 79 that you had that first-class license. We all saw that up there. It's like, oh, this guy's special.
No, it wasn't anything special about it. It was just what was required to work. The requirement the FCC had at that time was that if you were going to operate the transmitter of a directional AM station, you had to have a first-class license.
Well, for third-classers, that was a big deal, to see a first-class license, okay?
Why?
Because it was, I never posted the state licenses. Those were actually kind of plain-looking.
at one time, you actually had to have the licenses on display at the radio station.
Oh, yeah, they had to be posted.
Oh, yeah.
And the first class was like four times the size bigger than the third class, which I had. There was also a second class, which was also an engineering license, but I never quite understood the difference between first and second.
It was not for broadcast. It was for other stuff.
Okay.
Primarily, things like FAA markers you can take an additional exam off that and take one for ship radar and that sort of thing. And there was also, if I remember correctly, at the time I wrote the exam, the second class license also had a Morse code requirement.
Okay. So you start here, and it's an engineer shop, right? You've got union people here. So how does that work? For people who have no concept of this, listening to this, how does that work? You're an announcer. You come in. You have to work with engineers who have to operate the equipment, right?
Yeah. The engineers, under the contract at the time, in the IBEW contract, which is the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, by the way, those guys, we, as announcers, performers on the radio, we could do anything, including what they did, in terms of operating the console, turning a microphone on and off, that kind of thing. What we could not do, however, was we couldn't push the record button on a tape recorder. That had to be done by an engineer. And so when we come time to record commercials, for example, we would sit in the studio with a big microphone in front of us, and the engineer would be on the other side of the glass operating the console, and we would use hand signals back and forth to what we're supposed to be doing, and then we would just lay down the voice tracks, and they would put them into the commercials later on.
Quick story: when I was at WSB, it was a union shop, and we had TV, radio, newspaper, we had everything there in that building. And one day, I'm coming down the hallway, and there's a Boy Scout troop getting a tour. And the young lady giving the tour is very small, very short, and she couldn't reach the speaker volume
in the hallway so people could see. So I upped it for her. Within 1 hour, I was called to the program director's office with a union grievance against me because I turned the volume up on the speaker. He said, don't ever do that again. You call an engineer and they will do it. I said, but she was out in the hallway with the... I don't care what she was out in the hallway. Don't do it again. So I never did.
Rules is
rules. Some guys are stricter than others. I mean, we used to have things where when you wanted to know what the level was, you pointed at the number on the dial and the guy would turn the knob for you. Yeah, it's the same idea.
So who were some of those engineers back then, if you remember?
Dave Dzurek was the chief engineer, and his assistant was a guy by the name of Gene Butterfield. And
who passed away, unfortunately, not too long ago.
Yeah, great engineer, great human being, too. Love that guy.
Yeah, Dave was one of the best engineers I've ever worked for in terms of broadcasting engineers. He went off and worked for IBM after he left the business.
Yeah, David followed Stan Fisher as chief engineer.
I knew Stan quite well. He was a very nice man.
Stan had followed Lee Deccant.
There's a story about Stan, of course. Those of you who have, you know what the building looks like because you guys work in it. But the basement, of course, is, for one thing, it's extra deep. It's very deep, and there's a reason for that. The second thing is it's got a full kitchen in it, and you guys know that, too. And Stan Fisher used to cook lunch and breakfast sometimes down in that kitchen and serve it to the staff. He was character and a half.
I happened to, out of the blue, Lyman Marin's son, David, called me last night. I hadn't talked to him in decades. He mentioned Stan Fisher cooking down there. Said he used a garbage can, a metal garbage can, a clean one, I'm assuming, and cooked roast beef in that thing.
I've heard that. I never had the opportunity to participate in it, but I heard the story.
So the story.
You know why the basement is so deep, don't you?
Right. I was going to get to that. Why is it so deep, so tall?
Because at one point, first we'll start outside. Go outside and look at the tower. You'll see the tower is what's called in the tower business a composite tower. It is paper-legged on part of it and straight on part of it. The straight part, which is now a truss or a lattice-type truss, at one point in time when I joined the company, it was a slot antenna. It was a 2-foot diameter aluminum tube, basically, with a slot down one side that was that length and stood right where that truss is now, and it was for an FM station. The FM station used to broadcast from that. It got to the point where structurally it was so distressed that it was threatening to fall and land on cars in the parking lot, so they decided to spend the money to have a truss put on there. Since the FM had gone away anyway, it became, I think, WRKR, if I'm not mistaken, in those days.
Jim, we got to take a break here, so can hang on to that, and we'll come back.
Want to hear the story?
Yes,
want to hear everything. Jim Sorensen's here. It is WRJN Historical Marker number 7. Tom Carco joining in the conversation here. Hometown Radio Refreshed, a Civic Media station. At WRJN Radio, Hometown Radio Refreshed. We're a Civic Media station. I'm Don Rosen, Tom Carco joining me in studio. Jim Sorensen, our victim today for our WRJN Historical Marker number 7. We're recording the history of WRJN. This will be preserved for...
hopefully eternity.
Eternity, or as long as we all last, at the Racine Public Library. They're going to archive it for us. Also, the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association will keep it in their museum of audio. And also, it's podcast. So if you want to hear it, you can always listen to the podcast by downloading the Civic Media app, going to WRJN.com. Also, you can listen to it on the Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find it there. Just type in Don Rosen, and you will hear it. Jim Sorensen, our guest. And you were talking, Jim, about the tower in our backyard here.
Yeah, it was built by a local iron company. I think Racine Bridge built it, actually. And the straight section that's there now, which is a lattice or a truss type thing, was a tube, and it was an FM antenna. But the whole thing was structurally sound enough that they could have put a TV antenna up on top of it, and that's what takes us back to the basement. The basement was built deep enough to allow for a really, really modest lighting grid, and they were going to use the basement as the TV studio for the thing. And the kitchen, of course, was built because what did every local television station have in those days? Cooking. They had a cooking show. And there you went.
Well, let me tell you, the basement's still there. It was built into offices, though. It's not one big area anymore. It was built into, when Renaissance Magazine became part of the company, they divided it up, built rooms, conference rooms, offices. The kitchen is still there, but somebody took out the refrigerator and the stove. That's missing. But the kitchen is still there. But the actual, the big vastness of the basement is not there anymore.
They called it an entertainment area because it was the Journal Times that owned it at the time.
Yes.
And so they did all kinds of things down there. There were many dinners and gatherings. There were some weddings down there, too, wedding receptions that were held down there.
And the smokers used it, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was the smoking area.
Yeah. So, Jim.
I remember the place. Everybody smoked anyway, so it just didn't matter where you were.
Yes, I remember
that. You smoke in the studios.
Yeah.
I never did, although I did smoke in those days. I never smoked in the studio, only because you ran out of hands. You know what I mean?
So do you remember how tall the tower is? It's one of the great trivia questions for this place.
Offhand, I don't. I don't offhand remember how tall the tower is.
337.
Now, is it 337?
Okay.
Is that feet or meters?
337 feet tall.
Okay.
And I just learned this going back over some old material. The base of the tower is 660 feet above sea level. So, do the math. It's a total of 997 above sea level.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't realize half the tower is what you see. The other half is spread out on the entire property.
Yeah.
To match the height of the tower, there's copper straps reaching the entire property. We had to replace
the ground radials. Yeah,
the radials.
Actually, this one is kind of unique. If you were to go out into the middle of the lot that the radio station and the tower sit on, you'll find that there's a water well that has been dug down there years and years ago, and that water well is part of the ground plane for the thing.
And technical
terms known as the counterpoise.
Yeah. Those big stone blocks are still out there, too, that used to for the old tower.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, they're still. Those things are 14 feet in the ground, according to the documents I saw.
And you know where
that would be common.
And that tower.
For the height of the thing.
And that guy wire tower that used to be out there on those blocks is now up in Reedsburg, Wisconsin, on a station on 1400 AM. They're using that old tower.
Well, they're still using it. That's good. That's a good sign. Oh, by the way, I was going to say something to you, Don. Rain.
Yes,
that's the B side of paperback.
Oh,
writer.
That's right. You're right, Rain. Yes. Thank you very much. I was going to look that up.
Can't tell you what I had for breakfast, but I can remember that. I don't understand.
Some jocks never forget.
Yeah, because there was no A B side with the Beatles. Every side was a hit. So it was hard to tell what the B side was. I was going to mention with those radials that go out from the tower, the copper straps. When they replaced them several years ago, they had to rip up the entire parking lot.
Yeah.
Tear it up and put new asphalt down because they had their radials,
the parking
copper.
Lot wasn't there when they put those down.
Yeah.
Gosh. So we're going to try to do something here. It's to give people an idea what you kind of did back in the day. And we're doing this kind of... Not really technically a sound.
He's playing this through a little gadget he has.
I have a digital recorder with some audio of you. So let's see what this is. Jim Sorensen back in the day.
Thank you so much for joining me on a very nice morning here. I'm glad to be alongside of you. Jim Sorensen is my name. Presumably you know who you are. Stick around next. Kathy Larson coming along on Party Line at 9:05 after the news from ABC.
WRJ.
That's the stuff we used to do.
Jim, you sound exactly, and I'm not just blowing smoke here, you sound exactly the same now as you do on that recording. You haven't changed one iota. Haven't changed one iota. I'm telling you the truth. I wouldn't just say it. You sound exactly the same.
I guess I appreciate that. I that's I didn't know anybody. To be honest with you, I didn't know any of that stuff had ever been recorded, so I sure didn't.
Well, if it's anywhere, I've got it.
Yeah. Well, you would have it, Tom. I'll tell you that. Tom is a what's the word I'm looking for here? I guess he's kind of like a vacuum cleaner when it comes to that kind of
pack
stuff.
Pack rat.
Suck that stuff up and store it.
I think historian has more class to it.
Hoarder.
So thank you.
Historian. That's a good one. I like that one. Yeah.
There's another piece we'll do in a little bit, but it's referenced the funeral. And I've talked to you about that in the past. So, the building itself, what do you remember about the unique, strange, quirky things about this building?
Not much. The original building that held the transmitters, pre-building the part that had the studios in it,
right,
was still intact, and you could tell. There was because it was a stick-built wooden frame building, and it was on the east end of the main building, the building that has the studios in it now.
Which was incorporated
through a little door. I don't know what it's like back there now. But I do remember that the interior walls of that transmitter building were made out of a product called Homasote, which is a kind of a wall board. It's very cardboardy looking stuff, and it had all kinds of photographs, and it had the original station license, and I think the original construction permit. Posted on the wall from 1926, I hasten to point out.
Yes.
And I think you've got the license, haven't you, Tom?
I have a copy of a license from 1926, yes.
Yeah.
That's
the construction permit was different. It outlined the technical parameters, you know, that it was 100 watts of power through a horizontal long wire antenna that was suspended up in the air on wooden pylons over some bank building downtown. And that one was signed, actually, with a signature by Herbert Hoover. The license, I think, was printed with his name, but I don't recall.
What do we have in the lobby there, Tom? You put something up in the lobby, an old document from the early
I believe
days.
That's it, the one that I have.
That's the one? Okay.
Yeah.
And I think I sent a copy to you.
There were some photographs. I'll tell you one thing that was kind of interesting. There was a photograph of a band, the Studio Orchestra, that used to play at the WRJ.
Okay, Jim, hold on to that. We got to take a break,
there.
Jim.
His name was Lester Polfus.
Okay, Jim, hold on. Hold on, we got a break.
Hold on, quick break. We'll be right back. We're doing WRJN Historical Marker number 7. Jim Sorensen, former morning air personality at WRJN Radio. WRJN, hometown radio over Frasta's Civic Media Station. I'm Don Rose, and I'm here with Tom Carco and our special guest, Jim Sorensen, former morning air personality at WRJN. Small part of our WRJN Historical Marker Series. Jim is lucky number 7. Who's going to be number 13? I don't want to be that. So Jim is here with us today, and we're talking about the good old days. Were they that good, though? Okay.
Yeah, they were.
They were good?
Yes, they were.
They always look, everything looking back always looks good because you don't remember the bad times. You always remember the good times. And there were a lot of good times in the past.
Yes, there were.
Wait, Jim, when did you leave WRJN? What year was it?
1984, 83.
I think it's
84. Somewhere in that neighborhood.
84, I think.
84, yes. And I went to Denver, as a matter of fact, and took over as engineering director for a company out there. With a very specific purpose, but it was technical, so it's not something that'd be particularly interesting to you, the audience that knew me when I used to talk on the radio.
Speaking of which, there was a point, I mean, the station when you were here, the only reason I'm here is because I came in and you were already here for several years.
Yeah.
And so I'm the new kid on the block coming in, so I got to, you know, work with you and know you, so that's why I'm here. There was a point, the station was playing music back then, correct? Time, temperature, music.
Part, yeah. No, I deviated from that, much to the distress of Wilbert Gum, who was the general manager at the time. But he didn't do anything about it. In 1979, as you may recall, there was a political disaster, the Iranian hostage crisis.
Right.
And I opened the phone lines up at that point and said, what do you think about this? Where do you guys come out on this as an audience? You're in the Midwest of the United States of America, good, fine, upstanding, you know, American citizens. And it stuck. And until 84, I did the talk thing. Occasionally, I guess I'd play a record. I don't really recall doing so. But other than that, I always had an audience that called in and were very responsive and what have you. I will say this. I noticed that your advertising material for the station says it's progressive. I'm not sure I know what that is. You don't sell milk, so it can't be like progressive dairy used to be.
Long gone.
I don't think you sell milk anyway. But, you know, I was a conservative person, still am, so that was a kind of a bent to it. Yet, on the other hand, one of my favorite guests, and who appeared on a fairly often basis on the show, was a fine, upstanding Democrat by the name of Les Aspin, who had been a professor at Marquette, I believe, and also a congressman for our district, and went on to be Secretary of Defense. He served in the Kennedy White House.
Yep.
And was a good friend, often appeared on my. She was on the last. He was the last interview I did before I went out to Colorado.
Is that right? Yeah. Les Aspin did a lot for the community. He had a big hand in a lot of things that happened in the community.
He was also a nationally known name. I grew up in the East Coast, and I knew Les Aspin.
Yep.
Yeah. Sure did. I mean, if he hadn't dropped dead from a heart attack, he would have been the ambassador to China at that time. So.
Yeah. It's interesting. A newspaper interview with you or about you regarding in 1983, and you talked about opening up the phone lines, and you said it was more fun than spinning records. You enjoyed that?
Oh, it is more fun. Yeah. The part that's really fun, and particularly when you do it, and this is going to sound bad when I say it, so please don't take it as being really condemnatory. That's not my intention. When you don't have management support, in other words, you don't have the necessary actual technical facilities, you don't have the support of a support staff to help you do things, it's really difficult to do that kind of a show. You got in Do It Right, you really got to have a producer, and that wasn't going to happen. Bill Gumb didn't like the idea of it. He didn't understand it, for one thing. He's a fine guy otherwise, but he just didn't understand that kind of radio. He understood scripted radio. You play the record, you say the words, it's on the paper, and put it on the road. But that's because of his age, and that's how he was brought up in the industry. And in my case, I just had to wing it, and it was a hoot. It was exhausting, but a hoot.
Yeah. So let's talk about 1980. You were here, the Taster's Choice restaurant fire. Two firefighters die.
Yes, yes.
Tragedy for this community.
It was my honor to carry their funeral on the radio.
We broadcast the services live, and you were there, and we're going to play. Now, this might run a little bit, but it's you, and I thought you did a tremendous job with this. You were like the man on the scene leading into the services in December of 1980. This is Jim Sorensen.
Main Street has been blocked off for about four blocks in front of St. Luke's Church, as has 7th Street, to make room for the very large number of cars coming from visiting fire departments, and for the two fire trucks, engine number 1 and engine number 5 from the Racine Fire Department, that carried the caskets of the two fallen firefighters. A wet, cold day in downtown Racine. Many people stopped in their usual patterns in the downtown area here to watch the solemn ceremony taking place on the street as the caskets of the two bodies were blessed by Pastor Dennis McCarthy, then taken in solemn procession. A ceremony to pay honor to the memory of Clyde Carey and John Hogle. And also, I guess, to give us all pause to, as citizens, perhaps, give thanks for having men like them working for the city, willing to lay their lives on the line as these two so valiantly and gallantly did for the rest of us.
That was great work that day.
Well, you're very kind to say so. To this day, it puddles me up. I mean that most sincerely, particularly in light of our current situation, you know, in cities.
Yeah. So let's talk about some other things. The American Motor Show, Jim Bradley, you and he were good friends.
We still are. I got a wire from him the other day threatening to come out here and you know, stay with us for a few days. Naturally, we would love to have it. And his wife. That started out. Lloyd Northard, who was the head of the public relations department at American Motors at that time, actually had lunch with me and offered me the job of being the host of the American Motors Show. To be really honest with you, I turned him down, and the reason I turned him down was I didn't get the vision of the thing. I couldn't see what they were trying to do. And what they were trying to do, the way he described it to me, was not what it ended up being. Then I suggested that he might want to talk to Bradley. I don't say I got him the job. I certainly did not. He did that all by himself. And, through talent and perseverance. But he turned it into a legitimate enterprise, and I'm very happy to have been associated with him. I built the studios for them.
Is that right?
did some other consulting work for American Motors in my capacity of having an engineer's license or two. And it was a fun time for quite a number of years, as a matter of fact.
What was Jim doing before that?
He was the newsman on WKZN, which was a station that was the FM version of the Zion radio station, WZBN.
Okay.
It was a Kenosha license. It had been WAXO.
Waxo.
Waxo, which was a music station.
Yes, there's
they wanted to be Waxy, WAXY, but they couldn't be because Waxy was taken. It was actually taken by a station in Fort Lauderdale.
I know. That was a big top 40 station.
Yeah,
I remember Waxy.
Then he had been the news director at WLIP prior to that.
Okay.
And he was coerced to come over and do the news. We did the news together. I didn't read the news, obviously, but I did the production stuff and did the punch and buttons to facilitate the newscast for him.
Okay. So Brett and Jim Bradley, of course, once the American Motor Show came to an end, in the 80s, then he joined RJN doing the mornings up until the ownership change in 86.
That I was unaware of, to be honest with you. I didn't know that. I know he went out to California and he went into civic government after the...
He did pretty well out there, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He retired from out there, and he and his wife spent time between L.A. and Maui. So that's not all bad.
So let's talk about some of the people that you worked with over the years, personalities. You have any interactions with Ralph Schoenleben?
No, I did not. I think I met Ralph, but that was about it.
Any of the foreign language station, was that still going at the time you started?
No, but I can say good morning in Chinese, if that matters.
We didn't have that. That's about the only language you didn't have. Some of the other staffers, I mean, Don Edmark obviously was the news director. He started up the news department here after the Journal Times and kind of got things cooking to the point that they are now, whatever that is. And you've got Frenchie. Did you not hire Frenchie and Bob Cook?
I did indeed. Frenchie came to us from Lake Geneva. And of course, that's because he lived out in that area and he was a first class, what we used to call a clavier kitzler, which is a guy who played the piano for a living. And he had been a nightclub entertainer for, I think he was on the Ark when it first set sail with the first cruise that was on Noah's Ark. he was a fine guy all the way around.
He was the original lounge lizard.
I don't know about that.
He was the Bill Murray character on SNL who used to do the lounge stuff. I loved Frenchie Bouton. He was a great human being.
Mm-hmm. The fun things was when he had to come in and do the mornings for fill-in, he'd, of course, been out entertaining the night before sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And so, you know.
3-4 o'clock in the morning, he'd be up.
Yeah. So, but he was always there, always showed up, and always did great work.
By the way, if anybody's got a text message, a question for Jim, or you want to just make a comment, you can go to the Civic Media app. Just go to WRJN and type it in, or You can do it on the phone, 262-300-7445, 262-300-7445. One more time, 262-300-7445. And we do have a text message this morning. So nice to hear Tom Carco again. I remember listening to his news reports. My grandmother always had WRJN on. Tell Tom he needs his own show as well. Tell Jim Sorensen to get off the air. No, he didn't say that part. No, we didn't. I wouldn't tell you even if it was there. No, he didn't say that. But yes, if you want to text a message to our show, you can.
Too easy.
Yeah. Wow. So Bob Cook you hired as well, I mentioned.
Yes. Yes, Bob Cook was the vaccine. Bob Cook hired me way back when at a small station. After I left WFNY, I went down to Zion, Illinois, and to a little 250-watt directional corn popper down there that Bob was running for the Bickett Pharmacy people, who were famous folks in that part of the world. And, in fact, that's where I met my wife, although she had nothing whatsoever to do with the broadcast business. Never has had. She's a school teacher.
Ah. So who else do you remember? Names.
Oh, golly. Well, let's see. There was the first Party Line girl that I worked with, and they were actually called Party Line Girls and wore the title proudly, I think, was Kay Buss. And after Kay, there was another woman that was there named Maria something, if I remember correctly, and I honestly have no recollection of her. She was not there. Then there was Sue Paulson. She ended up marrying a guy in local government, if I'm not mistaken, and left the business, or left the station anyway. And then for a long time was Kathy Larson.
Yep.
And Kathy was just a fine, fine host. Kathy started at the station, as you probably know, in the secretarial end of things. She was the log typer.
Yeah, we got to take another break,
days,
Jim.
The program log was a sacred cow type document.
We got to take another break, okay? Can you hang in there?
It was hand typed every day, and
Hey, Jim.
Jim, hang in there. We got to take another break.
Don't move. Stay right where you are, Jim. All right. If you want to text us, you can. Text a message 262-300-7445 or download the Civic Media app. Just go to WRJN and do it that way. 749, Hometown Radio Refreshed, a Civic Media station. It's our WRJN historical marker with our guest, Jim Sorensen. Tom Carco in studio with me today as well. WRJN Radio. It's WRJN Historical Marker number 7. We're recording the history of WRJN Radio to preserve it for future generations who will say someday, it was something called radio? Really? No, the radio will always be here. Matter of fact, WRJN celebrates its 100th anniversary. We signed on the air 100 years ago on 1926.
December 6, 1926.
Yeah, and next year, 2 years from now, will be the 100th year that we signed on. I'm always confused if it's 100th year or 99th year.
Not those call letters, though. It started out as WLBG. Those were temporary call letters. Then a week later became WRRS, which stood for Racine Radio Station.
Oh, that's clever. And
then in 1928, after the two gentlemen who were involved in the initial setup of the radio station divested themselves and got out, and the Journal Times took over total control, then it became WRJN in 1928.
But, Jim, you weren't here at the get-go. You weren't here 100 years ago.
No, I was not. But I wanted to point out something. I don't want you guys to be worried about this. This is not something you need to be concerned with. But it was December 6th, 1926, when the thing kicked off. December 7th is Pearl Harbor Day. I don't think there's a relationship.
No.
And it's, by the way, December 6th, 26 started off in the arcade building downtown Racine on the mezzanine level, and then moved in 27 over to Hotel Racine on the third floor, stayed there till 37, then moved over on above the American Bank building downtown. That's the one that Dillinger robbed eventually in 1933, stayed there till 57, and then to Radio Park, which is now allowed to be said on the airs again.
did we get an interview with Dillinger when he was coming out of the bank?
No, they weren't.
We didn't have a microphone out there?
No.
Okay.
That's just...
By the way,
he received a round of applause, though, when he showed up.
By the way, in the Johnny Depp movie, Public Enemy...
That starts it out right away.
Yeah, it mentions Racine. It mentions Racine. Oh, yeah.
The opening sequence is about the Racine bank robbery, such as they did it in Hollywood. I interviewed one of the hostages from that bank robbery, Ursula Patsky. She was with the teller at the bank, and I interviewed as my all-time favorite interview. Yeah. So you were talking about, what were we talking about when we left?
I don't know.
People, yes. You were talking about someone in particular.
What did I have to say about him?
This is what happens when you get old, the three of us here. Nobody can remember anything.
Breakfast, you know, it's one of those things.
Yep. So we've been asking about, you talked about Frenchie, Bob Cook, and some of the engineer people. You were talking about the person from the Party Line people. Kathy was...
That's right. You
were still doing Party Line.
Kathy did a good job on that show. I can remember a couple of times, though, when for reasons of just because people come down with the flu, they get a cold, whatever the heck, you know, arrest, you know, incarceration, that kind of thing. When Kathy could not show up, I would have to do the Party Line show.
Yeah.
And I think that was a time that struck terror into the hearts of a lot of people. Because, sadly, and you may have gotten that or picked up on that from our conversation thus far, I very often can't really be responsible for what I might say. It's kind of unpredictable in a lot of cases. You never really know what I'm going to say or do.
That's why we have you on delay.
Yeah.
Get that 8-second delay running.
Good choice on your part. So I like the heck out of it. And I can remember you'd get strange phone calls on Party Line. It was quite a show. I don't know if people really appreciated the depth of interesting things happening, just serendipitous things happening with that program. It's like a lot of things that used to happen in radio in those days, maybe still does, I don't know, that it was just the people talking.
Yeah.
The people talking to the people, and that you get all kinds of fun things out of that. You know, I had one lady who kept telling me about her parakeet who kept falling off the perch. And you know, we finally decided that if she'd quit putting vodka in the water, it'd probably improve the situation.
So... interviews that you did during your time at WRJN. You've mentioned a couple to me in emails. Margaret Hamilton, who, of course, was...
The Wicked Witch of the West.
She was.
What do you remember
and
about that?
A lovely lady. And I had Vincent Price, as a matter of fact.
Right.
And local people, you know, some of the local folks doing various and sundry things of good work, either to promote something or... oftentimes to promote something, or just because they're interesting people. And I think maybe it's in any city of any size, well, I shouldn't even say of any size, you don't necessarily, you know your neighbor, but you don't necessarily know your neighbor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So out of the blue, in 2013, March 21st, 2013, you'd been gone from here for a long time. I hadn't heard from her about you, seen you, talked to you in any capacity. All of a sudden, it's a slow day here at the station, and I'm walking around, and all of a sudden, there's Jim Sorensen. Holy cow. What prompted you to do that?
Well, was I there?
Yes, you came in person. Chris Morrow was here.
I was born in Kenosha.
Well, I know that.
In fact, I've got a sister who lives there.
Yep.
And worked in Racine and Kenosha that whole time. And I think we probably were just up there visiting friends for some reason. And I thought, well, I'll just go over to the radio station and hang and rattle for a while, as we used to say in Denver.
You were here for a while, and I talked to you, and it was great to see you at that point. I mean, again, it had been quite a gap.
Oh, yeah.
I thought maybe you wandered up in your pajamas from Florida. You just you were on the interstate, and you just wound up here one day in your jammies.
What?
Yeah, well, it's real easy. You take 95 and you go north, and then when you get to, Buffalo, you turn left.
Hey, Jim, I want to thank you for being part of our WRJN Historical Marker Series. This is how we're going to preserve the radio station. Now, people who missed any part of this interview want to hear it again, you can listen on the podcast around 10 o'clock this morning. It'll be up. And you can listen either on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, whatever. Also at WRJN.com. And wherever you go, just type in Don Rosen, and the podcast will come up. And it'll be preserved forever and ever at the Racine Library and their archives, and also upon the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association as well. Tom, thank you.
Good to talk to you again, Jim. Actually talk to you.
It was nice talking to you guys. I enjoyed it very much. I mean, it doesn't really say much for you guys, as, you know, other than the fact that you're brave. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. I hope we can do it again sometime.
We didn't know what to do with this hour, so we invited you on. And we...
Good idea.
Hey, Jim. Good idea. Jim, hold on the line. Hold on. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you a second. Hey, Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in today. I'm Don Rosen. We'll do it again tomorrow, 6 a.m., WRJN.